I don't know what may create it in your marriage or in your relationships, but we all navigate conflict. And some conflicts are larger than others. Maybe in your home, the smaller conflicts that begin to add up. Maybe it's who takes out the trash. Maybe it's who does the dishes. Maybe it's who's going to take the kids to school early when they have to be there before school. But there are these little things that begin to add up over time. And the reality is, it often is not the major stuff that we argue about in relationships. It's often the tiny little things that over time begin to build up. And you have these thoughts of, hey, we're two intelligent people. We should be able to figure this out. This should not be creating this much tension and this many arguments and tempers that are flaring at this level. It's really pretty simple. 2 + 2 = 4 every single time. Now, there was an age when you did not know that equation. 2 + 2, you had no idea. But now when you look at that, that's not complicated. It's fairly simple. You don't even have to think, and you know that 2 + 2 = 4. And what we're going to talk about today, how to solve the small things that add up, how to navigate conflict where you diffuse what often explodes, it's just as simple as 2 + 2 = 4. You have everything you need. Everything you need inside you already to solve the conflicts, many of them, that you're navigating. You already know how to do it, and I can prove it to you. Somebody comes over for dinner. You invite another couple over, and when they leave, she forgets her coat. Because twice a year in Florida, it's really cold, 68 degrees. And so when she leaves, she forgets her coat. You don't grab the coat, chase them into the driveway, and say, how come every dang time y'all come over, you forget stuff? I can't believe I have to take care of your stuff. You're a grown lady. You should be able to remember, pick up my coat. But here it is. You've never done that. If you do, you have no friends. And so, no, what you do is, even if you don't like her, maybe this is your wife's friends and you tolerate them, you're still kind to them. You take the coat, you walk it out, you say, oh, you forgot this. And you smile, and inside you're thinking, you're so stupid. But you don't say it out loud. They're inside words and outside words, and you've learned that. So you extend some courtesy, you hand the coat. Or maybe earlier in the evening at dinner, they're sitting there, and one of them knocks over a drink, and it spills all over the floor. You don't say, oh my gosh, when you roll your eyes, I can't believe that. I knew we shouldn't put something that close to where you're sitting, because you're a disaster. Every time you're around, there's a problem, and you're just panicking on the inside. Listen, even if you just put in brand new carpet and the drink was red, you cover that. You're like, it's fine. It's fine. And you get the paper towel. Now, when you get in the kitchen, you may be having some kind of reaction, but you get the stuff and you get out there, oh, it's fine. Don't worry. This happens all the time. And you're thinking, when you're here, but you don't say that part because you know how to do this. Here's the deal. Show the same kindness and common courtesy to your spouse that you show to others. Have you ever noticed how sometimes we can treat strangers better than we treat our spouse? We can be more respectful to strangers than the one person we promised to love and spend forever with. And maybe you're thinking, yeah, I get that, but so much has happened. I mean, yeah, 2 + 2 = 4, but there have been so many 2 + 2 over the months, over the years. It just adds up over time, and you don't understand. Man, things are already escalated when we wake up in the morning, and there's just a sense, I'm angry all the time now. You can do this even when you're angry. You know how to do this. You put this in place. You can be in World War III with your spouse, and the phone rings, hello? Oh, yeah, that's awesome. We can connect Tuesday. We can grab coffee. That'd be great. Yeah. Hey, I hope you have a great day, too. And the minute you hang that phone up, you become Satan incarnate again. Like, you can turn mad on and off no matter how mad you are. You know how to do this. You just somewhere along the way decided that with your spouse, you can show them less courtesy than you show to friends or even strangers. this, what we're talking about today. Next week, we'll talk about the seemingly unsolvable problems, the big issues that, oh my gosh, how do we get around that? What do we do about that? But today, the little things that add up over time, it's as simple to fix as the equation of 2 plus 2. It's going to equal 4 every single time. So how do you do it? You've got to set a soft tone. You've got to set a soft tone. Now listen, the things that I'm going to roll through in the next couple of moments can radically change your marriage if you're married. They can radically change your future marriage if you hope to be married someday. But this will work in every relationship you have. Parents and kids and parents, friendships, distant relatives, not the crazy McCray uncle, but everybody else, this will work. And so the you of a year from now will give the you of today a standing ovation if you apply this stuff in your life. This will help you. Set a soft tone. See, the conversations you have because you have a desire to resolve conflict, you want to get it out of you. You at least want your spouse to understand how you're feeling, what you're thinking, and really you want them to kind of get it and see your side. And so the conflict is necessary, and the conflict is going to be there because we have different opinions sometimes, and of course you're always right, but you need to be able to express that in a way that they receive that. And the way you do that is to set a soft tone. If you're the kind of person, there's an argument that you and your wife have been having or you and your husband have been having over time, and y'all continue to just kind of argue about things, and it's always there, and there are a couple of issues that are just the difficult things, and you've not been able to resolve it. And so now when you talk about it, you're prepared because it's been a conflict so many times, and it should be not that big a deal, but you know this is going to be an argument. So you have your points laid out. You've got your spreadsheets ready. You're ready to prove your case because, dadgummit, you're going to win this argument eventually. Well, you can win an argument and still lose your marriage. So you set a soft tone. What does that look like? Soften your startup. A lot of conversations with your spouse will end the way they began. You give it the best chance to end well when you soften the startup. I understand sometimes things escalate and that's different, but often you soften the startup. So you say things that set the right tone. But it's not just about what you say or how you say it. You do know that you can say things without saying anything. Like when your spouse starts talking and you go, or I've seen some guys go, that works about as well as baptizing a cat. You don't want to do that. But it's about facial expression. In fact, did you know that more of communication is expression rather than what you say or how you say it? So you soften your startup. The Bible says, and we've looked at this verse in this series, if I speak in the tongues of men or angels, but do not have love, is what you're saying, how you're saying it, and the visual that you're giving with your expressions, do they all match what your heart is feeling, which is supposed to be love in marriage? If I do all this but don't have love, I am only a resounding gong or clanging cymbal, which nobody wants to listen to and nobody will pay attention to. So how do you set this soft tone? How do you soften the startup? You say I instead of you. It's I instead of you. You don't say things like, you spend way too much money. You don't say that. You say, hey, I really have begun to feel that we should try to maybe save some more. Can we talk about that sometime how we could save more? You put it on you. I instead of you. When you lead with you put the other person on the defensive. But when you start with I, you're inviting them in to how you're feeling about something. The second way to set a soft tone is to be clear. We've talked about don't do hints. Be crystal clear about the I statements and how things make you feel and what you're feeling. This is not a place for a guessing game. Be crystal clear. The third way you set a soft tone is don't let things build up. when things build up, you're going to erupt eventually. It's coming. And so the Bible does say, let love cover. Love covers a multitude of sins. When love can cover it, let it cover it. And so maybe you've done that, and you've tried to be loving, and you've tried to let some things go, but it's just still kind of there. And you're trying, and you don't want to have to discuss, which often turns into an argument, all the little things. And there's some things you just let love cover it, and it doesn't bug you anymore, and it's gone. But there are a couple things that just keep coming up inside you. You may have to have a conversation about those. But when you do, it's I, not you. You're setting a soft tone in your expressions and what you're saying, and you're trying to communicate how you feel about what's happening. Don't let things go build up. Ephesians chapter 4, do not let the sun go down while you're still angry. Don't let the sun go down while you're still angry. Because if you go to bed angry, you're going to wake up angry, which means you're going to go to bed angry, which means you're going to wake up angry, and you become an angry person. And once that happens, it has a way of flowing into the other relationships in your life. And anger, ongoing, unchecked, changes you. It's not a sin to be angry, but it is a sin if you stay in that state and you let it change you. And this is also true in your home. If you want your home to be a peaceful home with your kids, with your parents, with your siblings, do not let the sun go down while you're still angry. The next step in setting a soft tone, before you start the engine, know where the brakes are. Before you even go there, know where the brakes are. Some of you parents, when you were teaching your kids to drive, I did not. I was not the one that has taught my kids to drive. I have to have someone else do that because I lose my mind and I cuss. And as a pastor, you're not supposed to do that. So I don't have the patience. I can't teach my kids to drive. It just doesn't happen. And really, we don't want them to drive like me anyway. So it's better if someone teaches them. But I do know this from driving and from when I started, and you know this. You can know where the blinkers are. You can know where the windshield wipers are. You can know how to turn on the headlights. But when things get dangerous, you want to know where the brakes are. The same thing's true in conversations. When it gets escalated, when your spouse has a way of knowing where that trigger point is, and they're not just touching it, they're kind of poking it, you want to know before you ever start the engine, before you go into the conversation, know where the brakes are. How do you do that? You've got to be willing to make and receive repair attempts. Make and receive repair attempts. So when you start feeling that anger coming up inside, when you start thinking about what you think you want to say, because if I say this, it's going to feel really good saying that for a few seconds maybe, but you just want to say that thing, and guys, we're horrible about this. It pops in there, and we just got to say it because we're trying to win, and we're trying to get the next blow in. We want to just end this, and I can say something that's going to wrap this up and blow your mind, and you won't have any response to it. But after you do that, what have you won? So you learn to say things like, hey, I'm starting to feel a little tense. Can we bring the tone down? I know I'm participating, and maybe it's a me thing, and I know I have a difficult time when we talk about certain subjects that are sensitive, and so can we just kind of bring the tone down? You make repair attempts. And by the way, if you're the other spouse and you hear those words, it is your spouse trying to reset the conversation so it doesn't go to the fight level that it's always gone to. Learn to make and learn to receive repair attempts. The book of Ecclesiastes says there's a time to be silent and a time to speak. A time to be silent and a time to speak. Do you know what a time, silent means in the Greek? It means shut the fat up. It means there are moments when you just need to stop talking. It will benefit your marriage. It will benefit you as a person if you just shut up. There is a time to be silent. And yes, there's a time to speak, but we do the speaking, and what happens when conflict is there, even if it's small and it builds to a larger thing, we're good at the speaking, we're just trying to talk over each other, and nobody's listening. Proverbs has been called the book of wisdom. Proverbs says the tongue has the power of life and death. The tongue, the words you speak, has the power of both life and death. So if you're married, ask yourself the question, the words that I speak to my spouse, are most of them life-giving? Do most of my words bring life to them as an individual? Do most of my words bring life to our marriage? Or honestly, do most of my words bring death to our marriage? People leave people they love all the time because they just can't take their words anymore. The tongue, what you say, I mean, God's perspective, the tongue has the power of both life and death. You get to decide how to use it. And then finally, help yourself so you can help your spouse. Help yourself so you can help your spouse. If things get to the point where you're just about to say all the stuff that you've probably said before, maybe a couple of new things, and you know that when it goes here, we have liftoff, we're now at war, it is over, but you're just feeling it, it's best to help yourself by saying, I need to take a break. I need to step away from this conversation. It's not because I don't love you, but I'm feeling some things and I'm starting to get angry at a level that it's not going to be helpful for us. I just need to take a break. Did you know there's a psychological term, it's called flooding. That when you're at a conflict level, when you're in a heated argument with your spouse, on the inside, emotionally, you're feeling the same thing as though you're in the woods and you just came up on a grizzly bear or a huge snake. Inside, you're feeling the same thing. It's not a grizzly bear, it's just your wife, and she can take you out, but inside, your body inside does not know the difference, and so the pressure that's on you, the stress level you feel, what happens in your system, they have measured this. You experience this flooding, and it's inside, there's this response, and you're losing it. You want to exit that conversation, and it takes 20 minutes before you'll be back to normal on the inside. But you have to not just leave the person for a few minutes. You have to leave the conversation. Have you ever stopped an argument, but then you go into the next room and you're doing something in your mind, you're thinking, oh yeah, when we talk about this again, here's what I'm going to say. And right there, I should have said that. I'm ready next time. You can't do that. You have to both physically, emotionally, and mentally, all of that, escape the conversation. So for 20 minutes, you do something you like. You go for a run, you work out, you read a book, you turn on the TV. You somehow disengage yourself and your mind and emotions from that conversation and allow you to come back to a place where you can represent you well and in the loving way that you'd really like to. Help yourself so you can help your spouse. And then when you come back into that conversation, listen, there's still going to be some sensitive areas. There's still going to be some things that you feel tense about. Just be aware of that. And come in again with a soft tone and recognize there are those areas and be careful. And if you hear your spouse say, I just can't talk about this anymore today, let it be that way. Maybe you want to do something like set a time each week. Hey, Thursdays at 7 o'clock in the evening, we're going to talk about the difficult things in our relationship, and we're going to give half an hour to the difficult stuff, and the rest of the week, we're not talking about difficult stuff. Because nobody wants to wake up and walk into a day where I know there are going to be arguments. Let the marriage build on some healthy days, and then it'll be much easier to navigate the difficult conversations. The scripture also says in that book of wisdom, Proverbs, the words of the reckless pierce like swords, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. When you marry someone, you don't just marry them. You marry all the baggage they bring into the relationship from their past. And we all have baggage. We all have issues in some areas with mom and dad. We all have issues with prior relationships. We bring baggage. We are, in some areas, all of us, there's somewhere that you are, I know I am, broken. And so when you marry someone, you marry all of that. But your tongue has the ability, when you focus on what's wise, do not concern yourself with what's right. Focus on what's wise. You can be right and lose a marriage. Focus on what's wise, and it will bring healing. But the words of the reckless, the things you just say because you can, the things you say because you know that person on a level, and you know their past, and they're the closest to you, and you're close to them, so you can throw some grenades into their life that nobody else knows about. The words of the reckless pierce like swords. So, just to recap, you may want to take a picture of this if you didn't write it down. Go over this again later today while it's fresh on your mind or tomorrow. How to set a soft tone. I instead of you. Be clear. Don't let things build up. Before you start the engine, know where the brakes are. Make and receive repair attempts and help yourself so you can help your spouse. And then there's that verse in Romans. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. But you don't understand my wife. You don't understand my husband. You don't know. If it's possible, sometimes it's not. Sometimes you just recognize you married Crazy McCray, and it's just, there's nothing you can do. But that's rare. It's not as often. Some people think, oh, yeah, that's me. No, it's not. You got some stuff in you can still work on. If it's possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. And then when you notice your spouse trying to do this, and listen, even you, when you start functioning like this, they say that when you start working out, it takes 6 weeks for you to notice and 8 weeks for other people to notice. The same thing's true here. When you first start to try to do this, if you've been sort of an angry person and you're somebody that you've never been able to solve 2 + 2 = 4, you're going to take it to massive conflict every time. There's going to be argument every time. When you start doing this, your spouse is going to think you're going by ABC liquor on the way home every day. You're taking something, smoking something, drinking something. Who are you? Because you're showing a kindness that you've never shown. Understand, it's going to take some time. It's going to take some time for them to feel like you're not trying to manipulate. It's going to take some time for them to believe that this can be consistent and this can be real and that God is doing a heart change in your life. Everybody can do something temporarily. It's going to take some time. Be okay with that. And then if you're the other spouse, where you can and when you can, give hope. So you have to allow people to change to really see them differently. But some people can change, and there may be folks close to them that never see it because they refuse to. Proverbs, the book of wisdom, also says, "Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a longing fulfilled is a tree of life." Hope deferred. Man, I keep trying, and it's been months, and it doesn't seem to matter what I do or how hard I try. There's no sign. There's no recognition of the strides that I'm trying to make in my own life. Things haven't gotten better. The atmosphere is still the same. Hope deferred makes the heart sick. It is a soul sickness that is on the inside of a person that can come when the person they love the most refuses to allow them to change and decides to see them the way they've always been. But a longing fulfilled is a tree of life. When your wife or your husband notices, hey, she's trying. Hey, he's trying. It may not be where I'd like it to be, but man, that conversation just went differently than they have for years. That issue we were just in, he responded, she responded differently than she ever had. I'm noticing that. And you express those things, a longing fulfilled. Because, ma'am, it's not complicated. What your husband wants more than anything else is for you to be convinced that you married the greatest man that walks the planet. He really does. Even if he doesn't believe it about himself, he wants you to think he's fine with you being delusional. He wants you to think that you married the greatest man on the planet. And sir, she just wants primarily unconditional love, to be valued and accepted for who she is. And when you allow that, when you give that, but a longing fulfilled is a tree of life. So recognize your spouse is not perfect, but neither are you. Your spouse is not perfect, but neither are you, but Jesus is, and he can help. And so you talk to him each day and you say, God, help me today be the husband, be the wife that you created me to be. Help me be the kind of person that I could be proud of, that I want to be in life. And now let me very, very quickly, just for a moment, share a few ways. We're going to kind of transition here. It's kind of like two sermons. This one will be much shorter. Two sermons today. We're kind of packing two things together. I want to share five ways, guys, that you can become your wife's hero. And so I'm kind of like two for one today, and it's good because we'll probably take two offerings, so it's a good day. But this is important because this, guys, I just want to talk to you. Ladies, you can do whatever. You pop on Pinterest or whatever that is that I don't understand. Do whatever you want to do. It's fine. You're in church, but God's okay with it because I'm just talking to the guys for a minute. So please don't even worry about listening to this. But guys, there's something called the one heart principle. And if you understand this, it could be the biggest game changer in the history of your marriage. The one heart principle. The Bible says that when God created us, he created us in his image, and he also told us that we were to become one in marriage. And yes, there is an image there that is sexual. We become one in the flesh, but it goes deeper than that in the language. It literally means that we become of one heart. What that means is, when I wound my spouse's heart, I'm also wounding my own. When I hurt my spouse's heart, there will be some consequences. There are a result of that. I'm hurting my own heart. Now, the opposite is also true. When I encourage my spouse's heart, I'm also enhancing and encouraging my own heart. It's vital in marriage to understand the one heart principle. When you create damage, when you wound, or when you enhance and encourage, you're doing the same thing to your own heart. But you don't get it. You don't know my spouse. You don't know what I walk through. I don't know that they're going to respond. I've tried a lot of things, read a lot of books. I've prayed a ton. I said I would tell you five ways to become her hero. And heroes don't abandon doing the heroic things because they don't get their way. Those are cowards. Heroes do the heroic thing because it's heroic and it's their character and it's who they want to be. And they allow God to, over time, handle the results. So you're going to do this not because it's magical and not because it will instantaneously bring you the marriage you want. That won't happen all the time. You can't control how your spouse responds. Guys, specifically, you can't control how your wife responds. But you do give your marriage the best opportunity to be the best marriage on the planet when you function like this. So five ways to become a hero. Very, very quickly. Number one, don't say everything you think. Don't say everything you think. She asks, does this dress look good on me? And it is a trick question. It looks good on you, but your hips are kind of... No. When she asks you that question, she doesn't really want to know. Don't say everything you think. Just because it pops in your head, some things if you say it, you'll be dead. Don't say everything you think. Number two, say what is powerful. Choose to say the things that are powerful. If you think a positive thought about your spouse, say it. If you think a positive thought about your spouse, text it. If you think a positive thought about your spouse, write her a note about it. You can even ask Siri, hey, remind me three times a day to communicate with Angie something positive. You can do that because I know you're busy and I know how our brains work, but say what is powerful. Say the things that are meaningful. Hey, babe, the way you look, it is amazing. I can't believe I get to be married to you. Babe, the way that you mother our kids and how you function, I love how your mind works and the blessing you are to our kids. Say what is powerful. Number three, become a world-class listener. Now, world-class listeners listen not just with their ears, they listen with all of them, every part of their being. So I'm going to lock eyes. I'm going to pay attention. I'm not going to position myself in the conversation where just past her head, the Cowboys are on TV. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to give her my full attention. See, the reason we don't listen, guys, men, we're just, remember, the ladies aren't listening to any of this. They can't use this against you later. They're not even paying attention. So guys, let's just be honest. We don't listen because we like to talk. And if we don't feel like talking, we don't want anybody talking. And we don't listen because often we don't really care deeply enough about how our spouse is feeling. We want them to hurry up and get over it and act right and live right to make us feel better. But if you want to be your hero, become a world-class listener. Lock in and pay full attention. Ask questions in the conversation that show that you're engaged. Now, those are the first three. If you want to be her hero, you've got to get number four down. You've got to get this down. Size matters. Size matters. Not like that. You're in church. But I thought it too. Size matters. Here's what I mean with that. Go big with the small things. Go big with the small things. What we tend to do is the marriage gets in crisis, and so we think we're going to go on a cruise. Or I'm going to take her to Europe for a vacation if you can't afford that. Whatever you can do, whatever big looks like in your life, you go big with the big things. And one or two of those a year doesn't do anything for her. You've got to go big with the small things on a regular basis. When she gets in the car, you put it on her favorite radio station just because she likes that kind of music. Even if it's classical. You pay attention. You go to the restaurant where she likes to go. You offer every time at the end of the meal, if she ordered something different, for her to take a bite of yours, your meal. You make sure that you go big with small things. And as you do that day by day, she's going to start to think most of the time. You set the stage for this to be reality. It won't happen every time, but most of you give it the best chance for her to think she married the greatest guy in the world. You when she's too cold, you turn the thermostat up. And now you'll sit in the family room naked because it's hot as hell, but you're going to, and maybe that'll lead somewhere. You don't know. You turn the thermostat up because she was cold. You did a nice thing. You think of her. When she's the last one up and she gets in bed, you get up and turn the light off rather than saying, hey, you left the light on. You go big with the small things. Number five, you touch her, but not just like that. Did you know there's something, I learned this week when I was studying for this, there's something called skin hunger, and ladies have it more, and they like to have their shoulders gently rubbed, or their arm rubbed. They like for you to hold hands. You've got to be willing to show affection. Now, some of us, the way we grew up, this is difficult. Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad you understand that, because we bring some baggage into the relationship, but you've got to be willing to grow beyond. Listen, most growth happens, if not all growth, in uncomfortable places. If you want your muscles to grow, you have to stretch them, and they become uncomfortable, and you have to work them. So if you want your marriage to grow, you've got to be willing to be uncomfortable. Just hold her hand more. Rub her back more. Now, not here. We don't want to see all that. I mean, you can hold hands, but some people go too far with this, and you're gagging when you're... I mean, I remember a couple when we were in high school. They were in the church, and they were disgusting. It's like, get a room. We're in church. But not that far. Like, you need to have good boundaries, but you don't need... You don't need to give your bride the impression that the world, you don't want the world to know that she's number one to you. You want her to feel like she's the most special. So if she likes it, do it. And that translates in many ways, but if she likes it, be affectionate. And then number six, I told you there'd be five, but I'm going to give you a bonus one. Take it like a man. Take it like a man. Put your pride aside. See, pride will tell you it's her fault. Pride will tell you if you'd married somebody else, pride will tell you you're not that bad and you're better than most men and you don't do this and you don't do that and she should be grateful for what she has. Pride will cause you to focus on what you cannot change and miss the very one thing you can change, which is you, which would maybe, probably, most likely give you a better marriage, but definitely make you a better person. So take it on the chin. Stop functioning like a little boy that blames everybody else. Stand up and be a man and put your pride aside and let her be more valuable than how you feel about you. And she will probably make you feel greater than you could have ever felt about yourself. Hey, would you pray with me real quick? Father, I do thank you for every person in this room. Father, for those that are married, I pray as we roll through this week, we would apply these simple truths. And help us to remember, God, that the biblical pattern for success has always been consistency. So we're not doing this because there's some result we get in a few days. We're doing this because it's who you created us to be and how you want us to function. And it's going to help us to be more like Jesus and to be the best version of us we're able to be. Father, for those that are single or single again or hope to be married someday, God, I pray that this truth would be planted deeply in our lives. And as we think about being married in the future or think about friendships and other relationships, that we would embrace this and become the best version of us we could possibly be. And Father, I pray for those in this room who are hurting on a deep level because they love someone that doesn't love them the way they wish they would. And the marriage is in trouble, and some of these words this morning are hard to hear, and they almost feel like a little bit too late. God, I pray that you would help those individuals sense your deep, abiding love. God, that you would give them peace in knowing that you've got their future in your hands. And no matter what happens, because you're God, and you love them so much, if they'll seek you and trust you, it's going to be okay, no matter what. Thank you that you're a father who's passionate about being compassionate, who's interested in healing our wounds and is able to do that. With heads bowed and eyes closed, maybe you're in this room this morning and you know that the next step in your life is you need to commit your life to Christ. You hear about some of these things, and no matter who you are, as you think about your relationships, you think, I don't think I can do that. And you're right, you can't and I can't. It takes the Spirit of God living inside us to do something beyond what we would naturally and normally do. And there's a God who longs to know you in a personal way. He wants to be your personal God. One that you can count on and rely on day by day, on the good days and the moments of tragedy in life. He wants to know you. He loves you that much. And so this morning, if you'd like to commit your life to him, I want to pray a very simple prayer. You can pray it out loud or you can pray it quietly in your heart. You just say, "Dear God, I know that I need you. Jesus, please come into my life. Please forgive me of my sin. And help me to live for you. Thank you so much for loving me. In Jesus' name, amen."